Several years ago, we had a really interesting outreach event here in the worship center. We invited representatives of each of the major world religions to come and to present their case on what they believe and why they thought they were right when at odds or different from everybody else. And the place was packed. A couple thousand people were here, and many of these representatives brought their own cohort along with them. So it was a religiously very diverse group. I was the moderator of that meeting and concluded it with a final question that went to everybody. And the question went like this. Just suppose that you see a terrible automobile crash and that you rush to someone who is obviously dying. And this person says that he has lived a wicked life and knows that he is soon going to die. What can you tell him that he should do to be right with God before he dies and for eternity? You have 3 minutes to answer the question. And the different answers were given. But one of the sadly most memorable answers was the representative of a world religion who said, after taking a deep breath, "Well, I tell him to get a really good lawyer." Well, let me ask you a question. Suppose you're traveling in a foreign country and you're arrested for something you didn't do. So you're completely innocent, but this is serious business, and you have a choice. Would you choose direction from God or a really good lawyer? Well, hold on to your answer while we visit an Old Testament story in 1 Samuel chapter 23. I encourage you to bring your own Bible to our studies, but if you didn't, then the Blue Wooddale Bible in front of you, it's page 456. The date for this story is around 1000 BC. And the primary characters are the then present and the future king of Israel, Saul and David. David was the son-in-law of Saul, and Saul was out to kill him on the hunt. And David was on the run and hiding in caves and hills. David had around him a ragtag private army of 600 misfits and outcasts and renegades. But all things considered, David was doing relatively well, at least better than he previously had been. He was in his home territory. He was surrounded by friends, and the king and all of the king's bounty hunters had no idea where he was or how to find him. But then David received an urgent 911 message. So imagine yourself hiding somewhere and a murderer is after you. And then you get a call on your cell phone that you are desperately, urgently needed by your family. The trouble is, if you come out of hiding to help your family, then the murderer will know where you are and perhaps kill you. But if you stay in hiding to escape the person who wants to kill you, then you can't run to help your family. When David was told, "Look, the Philistines are fighting against Keilah and are looting the threshing floor," he inquired of the Lord, saying, "Shall I go and attack these Philistines?" The Lord answered him, "Go, attack the Philistines and save Keilah." But David's men said to him, "Here in Judah we are afraid. How much more then if we go to Keilah against the Philistine forces?" Once again, David inquired of the Lord, and the Lord answered him, "Go down to Keilah, for I am going to give the Philistines into your hand." So David and his men went to Keilah, fought the Philistines, and carried off their livestock. He inflicted heavy losses on the Philistines and saved the people of Keilah. Now Abiathar, son of Ahimelech, had brought the ephod down with him when he fled to David at Keilah. Keilah was a border town. It was within the borders of Israel, but it wasn't terribly far away from Philistia. And while this wasn't a major battle, the Philistine raiding parties were coming across the border and they were stealing the harvest from this town. And if they lost their harvest, they were at risk of starving to death. So David wanted to go and fight the Philistines and chase them off and save the town. But he had this small army of 600 men, and they were afraid. They had never fought together. They felt that they were safe in their home territory. And the whole idea of marching off to this town of Keilah, well, it seemed suicidal. So David had a seemingly impossible decision before him. And he inquired of God. David asked God, "Shall I go and attack the Philistines?" And God answered him, "Go attack the Philistines and save Keilah." Now, you know, when your life is on the line, you really want to confirm and make sure that you got this right. So David asked again, "Shall I go and attack these Philistines?" And God answered him again, "Go down to Keilah, for I'm going to give the Philistines into your hand." Well, if that's what God wanted, that's what David would do. He was willing to put his own life on the line. In fact, he was willing to risk the life of 600 other men in order to obey God. And that's exactly what he did. They went to this town. They fought against the Philistines. They conquered them. They actually took their livestock. And it was a small but a significant victory. And the point here is that when David faced a crisis, he turned to God and asked God what he should do. But King Saul, his adversary, took a very different approach. Saul was told that David had gone to Keilah, and he said, "God has handed him over to me, for David has imprisoned himself by entering a town with gates and bars." And Saul called up all his forces for battle to go down to Keilah to besiege David and his men. But Saul never inquired of God. That was the contrast. He never asked God. He never prayed. He just assumed that God was on his side and that God was working for him. David had been very hard to catch because David was on the run in fields and hiding in caves. But now he was going to be trapped in a walled city. And if necessary, the king would kill everybody in the city in order to get at David. And he did something that I think none of us should ever do. He assumed that he could speak for God. Saul said, "God has handed him over to me, for David has imprisoned himself by entering a town with gates and bars." By the way, these bars are iron rods. There's no Budweiser signs that are out here. It's not that kind of a bar. What he is saying here is that this was a walled city. And if David was in it, all he had to do was put on a siege, and he could get David for sure. But what's scary here is that he speaks as if he knows exactly what God says, and he's wrong. It's scary when people do that, when they interpret current events and politics in a way that interprets it for God, speaks for God. Saul was foolish. Anybody that does this is foolish and arrogant, and it turns out that Saul was completely wrong. He speaks for God, but he has no idea what God is thinking and no idea what God is doing. And he should have just shut up, but he didn't. What a contrast to David. Saul had power and position and money without God. And David had God, but he didn't have any power, didn't have any position, didn't have any money. Well, then he faced a new dilemma. Saul found out that he was in this city called Keilah, and Saul is on the way with the entire army. So what's David to do? If he stays there, we know from a previous incident that Saul is willing to slaughter everybody that's there in order to get David. That means that David is going to be the cause of the death of every man, woman, child, baby, livestock. That's what Saul did at a village called Nob. And everybody's going to be dead because of David. He certainly didn't want that to happen. On the other hand, if he leaves, is he disobeying God? Because God is the one that told him that he should be there. And he was committed that he would obey God at any price, so he shouldn't run away. So what does David do? Well, he inquires of God. When David learned that Saul was plotting against him, he said to Abiathar the priest, "Bring the ephod." David said, "Oh, Lord God of Israel, your servant has heard definitely that Saul plans to come to Keilah and destroy the town on account of me. Will the citizens of Keilah surrender me to him? Will Saul come down as your servant has heard? Oh, Lord God of Israel, tell your servant." And the Lord said, he will. Again, David asked, will the citizens of Keilah surrender me and my men to Saul? And the Lord said, he will. So David yearned to know what God wanted. He committed in advance that he would obey whatever God had to say, but he just didn't know. And until God told him, how could he obey it? And I think a lot of us sort of know what David was going through because we've done the same thing. We've said, God, I'll do whatever you want me to do. I just don't have any idea what you want me to do. So God, tell me. Tell me, should I stay in this marriage or should I get out? Should I marry my girlfriend or my boyfriend? What should I do about this medical procedure? I have a job offer that's on the other side of the country, but all my family and friends are here. Should I take it because I'm not going to get another employment opportunity in Minnesota? Or should I stick around and will there be another opportunity that will come up later? What am I supposed to do about this contract, about this medical procedure, about this pregnancy, about... And you know the prayer because probably you prayed it. God, just tell me what you want and I'll commit in advance and I'll do whatever you have to say. David didn't want there to be another slaughter, but David didn't want to be executed either. And he didn't want to disobey God. He needed a word from God. And God answered him. God gave David a quick and a straightforward answer, which I wish he would do for me. Because lots of times I have said, God, I'll do whatever you want. Just tell me what. And I don't hear. So I like the quick and straightforward answer that God gave to David. Although actually, maybe it wasn't quite as straightforward and simple as it first appears. Because apparently God did not actually talk out loud for David to hear. The answer came through a priest named Abiathar, and God apparently didn't talk out loud to Abiathar either. For what we are told is that this priest brought with him and wore an ephod, which was the garments of the high priest of Israel. And for the high priest, included in the garments was something called the Urim and the Thummim. And it was a means for the ancient people of Israel to ask God a question and for their leaders to get an answer directly from God. The difficulty is, we don't know much of anything about the Urim and Thummim other than that it existed. Some people say, well, it was two sticks. And other people say, no, it was a pair of stones. And maybe it had some Hebrew characters on it. Or it was like dice, and you roll it, and then you get the answers. And it says yes or no. Although when you read through the Old Testament, you discover that the answer was pretty much always yes, which is another confusing part of all of this. But David asked the questions, and Abiathar rolled the Urim and Thummim, and God said, well, what he always said, yes. And yes, Saul is coming to the town of Keilah. And yes, even though you save the lives of these people, they're going to save their own skins again, and they're going to turn you over to Saul so that he can execute you. So at least he knew what God said. The question is, does this work for us? Because it would really be cool if it did. I mean, just think about this. You're trying to decide, should I buy a lottery ticket and will I win the big bucks? So you roll the Urim and Thummim, and if it says no, yeah, you save some money on a lottery ticket. And if it says yes, then you're rich. Well, just think of all the times you could do this and ask God and get a guaranteed yes or no. But we don't really know much about this Urim and this Thummim. And we know it doesn't exist anymore. In fact, it pretty much doesn't appear again in the Bible after this roll by Abiathar. But that's not to say that God didn't communicate with people, including David, in lots of different ways. He did, as he does. Sometimes it was through prophets and priests. Sometimes God would actually, and still does, speak out loud to people. Sometimes it's a whisper to the soul. Sometimes it's through circumstances. Sometimes it's through a godly friend. Most of all, it's through God's written word, the Bible, which was unavailable to David. What's most important for us to know is that God communicates. Communicates to those who are committed to obey his will. A friend of mine took his grade school age son to camp, and did what parents maybe shouldn't always do, went to visit him midweek through his first week at camp, and arrived there right after his son had been in a fight with other campers. And his son was ready to go home. So Dad sat him down and said, what you really need to do is you need to stay the rest of the week at camp, and you need to work through this. And what his son did was he went to his cabin, packed up everything, and put it in the car. So before leaving, Dad sat down with son again. And he said to him, so has God told you what to do? And his son said, yes. And the dad said, well, what did God say? And the son answered, God said that I should stay and that I should work through this. Dad asked, what are you going to do? He said, go home. And then the dad said something that I think is profound. He said, son, you heard the voice of God in your heart. And if you disobey, when you are older, you will not hear God speak to you again. And I know people like that. I know people for whom God has said, stay in the marriage. And they've walked away. Those to whom God has said, forgive your mother. And she didn't forgive. And now they pretty much don't hear God speak. So what's most important here is not how David heard from God, but that he listened. So David and his men, about 600 in number, left Keilah and kept moving from place to place. When Saul was told that David had escaped from Keilah, he did not go there. David stayed in the desert strongholds and in the hills of the desert of Ziph. Day after day, Saul searched for him, but God did not give David into his hands. While David was at Horesh in the desert of Ziph, he learned that Saul had come out to take his life. And Saul's son Jonathan went to David at Horesh and helped him find strength in God. Don't be afraid, he said. My father Saul will not lay a hand on you. You will be king over Israel, and I will be second to you. Even my father Saul knows this. The two of them made a covenant before the Lord. Then Jonathan went home, but David remained at Horesh. So David relied on God. And God protected David from the king who wanted him dead. Now, there's a strange irony here because King Saul has pretty much the entire army of Israel out looking for David, and they can't find him. And his best friend, the crown prince, Jonathan, wants to go see him, and he has no difficulty finding him at all. He just goes exactly to where he is. And there is this brief encounter between these two men who are best of friends, closer than brothers. And it was the last time, at least of record, the last time that they spoke, the last time these two good friends saw each other. Jonathan did what a friend, a godly friend, is supposed to do. And that is that he blessed and encouraged David. He said, don't worry, the king, my father, is not going to kill you. And then he did something extraordinary. He abdicated the throne of his country. He said, David, you will be the next king, and I will be second to you. I will support you. I will be number two so that you can be number one. But I think the best line of all of this is that Jonathan helped David find strength in God. David relied on God in distress, and God sent to him a friend who strengthened him. Blessed are you if you have a friend who strengthens you in God. Blessed are you if you have a husband or a wife or a boyfriend or a girlfriend or a small group or a mentor or whoever it may be who strengthens you in God. This is someone who speaks the word of blessing, speaks the word of encouragement. Blessed are you when someone in your life makes you strong in God. What a contrast to Saul. He no longer looked to God for direction or for strength. He simply relied on his own resources from snitches to rumors to spies, the Ziphites went up to Saul at Gibeah and said, "Is not David hiding among us in the strongholds at Horesh on the hill of Hakalah, south of Jeshimon? Now, O king, come down whenever it pleases you to do so, and we will be responsible for handing him over to the king." Saul replied, "The Lord bless you for your concern for me. Go and make further preparation. Find out where David usually goes and who has seen him there. They tell me he is very crafty. Find out about all the hiding places he uses and come back to me with definite information. And then I'll go with you. If he is in the area, I will track him down among all the clans of Judah." But you notice again that Saul never inquired of God. He depended upon rumors. He depended on good intelligence reports. He had great confidence in his own smarts. And he believed that he could just do this himself without God's help. And we all know of lots of people who are like this. They're not atheists. They believe in God, but they just have a lot of confidence in themselves. These are those who are convinced that they have the intelligence, have the money, have the power, have whatever they need in order to make it in life, and there's no need for God. That's the way it was with Saul. So we have David, the God-dependent, and Saul, the self-dependent. And they come to the same place, to the same rocky mountain there in that Judean wilderness. Saul was going along one side of the mountain, and David and his men were on the other side, hurrying to get away from Saul. As Saul and his forces were closing in on David and his men to capture them, a messenger came to Saul saying, "Come quickly, the Philistines are raiding the land." Then Saul broke off his pursuit of David and went to meet the Philistines. That is why they call the place Selah Hamalakoth. And David went up from there and lived in the strongholds of En-Gedi. Okay, so it looked like Saul got it right. His army closed in on David and they were about ready to pounce. And David, every indication was that he was a goner, that Saul was probably going to execute him right there on the spot. And then, at the last minute, Saul gets an urgent message that he and his army are needed elsewhere because there is an enemy raid. And they leave totally unexpectedly. They abandon the pursuit of David. And the place was called Selah Hamalakoth. As you know, there are many different ways of translating words from one language to another, and there are some different possibilities of how these Hebrew words may be translated into English. But I think the one that I like the best is that this place was called the Rock of Escape, because every indication is that Saul had won and that David had lost until God orchestrated an escape. God distracted Saul, took him away in the nick of time. And David was able to escape because of what God had provided for him. It reminds me of two wonderful lines in the New Testament. In 1 Corinthians 10:13, God is faithful. God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted or tested beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted or tested, he will also provide a way out so that you can stand up under it. That is that God is faithful to those who love him. God is faithful to those who are committed to his son, Jesus Christ. God is faithful to those who seek his mind and commit to do it. He provides a rock of escape. So we rely on him. We believe in him. We follow him. We believe that he is there for us in difficult decisions, in frightening places, in what seem like life-risking circumstances. When in cities that are walled in and there doesn't seem to be a place out, when under the threat of death, when pursued by evil enemies, when up on a mountain and those who are out to get us are coming around the mountain and it seems as if there is no escape, we come to the rock of escape. And God is there. God will not abandon you. He will meet you at Selah Hamalakah. The rock of escape. God, we've been in those tight places. And we will be again. So let us register right now with you that we believe in you, are committed to you, and that we will trust you to the last circumstance, to the dangerous place, absolutely convinced that you are the God who meets us at the rock of escape, that you deliver us from every temptation and test, that God, you are faithful. We believe you. In Jesus' name, amen.